Welcome to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner, the show where we say goodbye to burnout and hello to freedom through automation. We're Jamie and Jessica, and in each episode, we'll explore how you can transform your tax or accounting practice, giving you the freedom you desire as an entrepreneur. We'll share stories and lessons from industry pros who have successfully transitioned from being skill-based producers to thriving business owners. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to build a business you love. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to this week's edition of Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. This week, we have a special guest, Ryan Elbline, who is a CPA and founder of Elbline CPA LLC, an accounting and tax practice based in Connecticut. He began his career in the tax departments of two large public accounting firms before transitioning to a new role as a controller for a real estate developer. In 2021, Ryan decided to create his own tax and accounting practice as a side gig, which turned into his full-time focus just 2 years later. Now Ryan is working to grow his tax and accounting practice, mainly focusing on providing a full-service solution to trade businesses. When he isn't working, he is spending his time with his wife, his two sons, and his golden retriever. Welcome, Ryan, to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. So excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. So I would love to just start by asking you the question we start everyone with, and that is, can you share us a bit more about the details of your journey through working for the larger firms into that role as a controller and then starting your own side gig and how it got you here today? We would love to hear all the dirty details of how you got to this point.
Yeah. So actually, I think it's a little bit of a unique way into accounting, right? So I actually didn't know I wanted to be an accountant in the beginning. I went to college for criminal justice. I thought I wanted to be in law enforcement. And I had a professor there in my college that basically helped me see that I was good at accounting and I would better off or better served getting an accounting degree instead of getting a criminal justice degree. And I could still go and do whatever I wanted to do in law enforcement if that's what I wanted to do after I got my degree. And so one thing led to another. I got an internship with a firm called Markham, which has now just been bought out by CBiz this past week. And started out with them in the tax department as an intern. Two internships with them. Got offered a job as soon as I graduated my senior year in college, which, you know, how do you say no to that, right? Having a guaranteed job when you graduate. So got offered a job with them. I went and worked for them for, it was about 4 years or so in their tax department, working on all sorts of things from real estate entities to construction entities, you know, you name it, I probably worked on it, even nonprofits and whatnot. Really good base knowledge there about how taxes and accounting works. Left there after about 4 years to go to Cohn Resnick up in Hartford, Connecticut. I worked there for probably 8 or 9 months before the opportunity arose to become a controller for a real estate developer down on the shoreline in Connecticut. And real estate being kind of what I wanted to work with, you know, the types of entities I liked working with, you know, I really couldn't pass up the chance to really get in there and work inside a real estate company, learning it from the inside instead of just knowing the tax aspects. So I went to go work for him for, I was there probably all 3.5 years. But while I was there, I wasn't really, you know, what I wanted to do. It was a good learning experience, but not exactly what I wanted to do forever. Once he kind of got to that role, it was really, there wasn't a whole lot of upside for me. They didn't really have a CFO. It was kind of just a family-owned real estate development company. So maybe someday I could have been called a CFO, but it wouldn't have really been any different than what I was doing on the day-to-day. So basically, I was like, all right, I need to get out of here and find something else that's better for me. I didn't love the big public accounting firm aspects anymore, right? I didn't love tracking my time. That's probably like the most dreadful part about being at a big accounting firm, right? Having to track every hour of every day. So I was like, you know what? I don't want to go back and work for a big firm anymore. I want to try to figure out how to do this for myself and just build my own thing. Plus, you know, you look at the big firms and all the partners that I worked for. I mean, half of them have been divorced multiple times. They all work more hours than we work as staff and seniors and whatever else. And it's like, dude, is that really what I want to do when I'm 60 years old? Do I want to be working 70 hours a week still? Like, I don't think so. I kind of almost want to be retired when I'm 60. So I'm like, you know what? Let's do my own thing. Let's start it out fresh. But the challenge coming from private into creating your own firm is you don't have clients to take. I didn't have a list of clients that I could just, you know, bring over with me. I didn't have those connections anymore because I had worked for 3 years outside of public accounting. So I really had to start from scratch. And I got really lucky where my wife's coworker's boyfriend had made a ton of money during COVID. And he needed an accountant to help him, you know, kind of get things under control and figure out how to do his taxes. So he ended up becoming my first client and I brought him on kind of got stuff under control. And then from there, just kind of spitballed it, right? Just did everything I could possibly do and brought on more clients, friends, family, people he knew. My own friends and family kind of got brought on, and word of mouth just started catching fire and people came in. After probably the first few months of doing it as a side gig, I'm like, all right, I have something going here, right? I've got, you know, decent amount of clients come in the door. This is feasible. I can actually do this. And started just bringing on as many clients as I possibly could until I got to the point it was too much work to do as a side gig.
Yeah.
And then January of 2023, I decided, you know what, I'm going to leave my full-time job and just do this full-time. One unique thing I did have going for me was the firm Cohen Resnick. I actually was able to connect with some of them again and kind of do some subcontracting with them. So it was kind of a way to work with them, still be on the big clients, still keep my feet wet in that kind of world, but also have my own schedule, do my own thing and make my own money. And that really helped get me comfortable enough to leave my full-time job and go out on my own.
Yeah. Wow. That is quite the journey. So I would love to hear more about the mindset that it took you to take the leap. What was it about that time where you were like, okay, I can see the potential here. What was it that was like the trigger where you're like, okay, I know I can safely and confidently do this? Because I think there's a lot of people who, it's usually a forced on them decision to go full time, right? Like whether they lose a job or they have to move and they're like, okay, this is my only option. And then they leap into it. But you had a really great job and were starting to build the client list and having the volume that you needed to do it financially. But what was the thing that like you switched in you and you were like, okay, I'm safe. I can do this.
Yeah. So I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a big risk, right? I had my first son February of 2022. So there's about just under a year old when I decided to go full time. It was a big decision. I was making good money as a controller of a real estate developer. And I was really going from guaranteed money to almost nothing, right? I mean, I still had some clients. It had been going on for a couple of years. So I had some clients, some money coming in, but it was definitely a big risk. You know, for me, it just came down to really having to believe in myself to actually go out there and do it. Needed to be done, right? At this point, I'd already been so busy working crazy hours because I was doing my full-time job and then also working at night to get these clients done. So I knew that if I cleared up my table of work for that full-time job and didn't have to do the 40 hours a week plus work for him anymore, right. I knew I had that time to go out there and really network with people and find those clients that I needed to make it, you know, viable for me.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely helped me having a little bit of that backstop of the subcontractor work too, because while it wasn't guaranteed, you know, big firms have trouble getting people these days. We all know there's a pipeline struggle, right? So they can't bring people in the door to work for them. So I had the ability to just say, hey, I need this many hours, you know, give me work. And they had it available to me. I was very lucky in that regard, but it's a little bit of a different thinking, right? Instead of just having to grow everything from scratch and get my own clients, I found another way to sort of bring in the money so that I could slowly wean that down as I bring in more clients.
I love that. I love that you looked at it through that lens too, that it wasn't, nothing is forever, right? Like when we have to make decisions to piecemeal it together for a period of time, it is just that. It's just a period of time. And if it's the long result or the long vision that we have is able to come to fruition because we make those sacrifices or short-term decisions, then that is the way to do it. And there's a lot of people that piecemeal it together for a while too. I'm curious, when it came to having that conversation with your past employer and saying, hey, I'm available for contractor, I think there's some people out there that are like, oh my gosh, maybe that's an option I never thought of. And it can help me in this, you know, the first year or two in getting to being able to support myself with a full roster of clients. And also the confidence to support a full roster of clients, that's a pretty big risk too. But how did you have that conversation and broach that with the owners of that firm so maybe others can take away from that?
Yeah, so it was actually interesting how it happened. It wasn't planned by any means. I think how it happened, I actually made a post on social media about something, talking about a different firm I worked for. And one of the partners reached out to me and was like, oh, I hope you weren't talking about Cohen Resnick. I'm like, no, I wasn't. He was, hey, you know, if you're going to come out and work for us again, like, you know, we're always looking for people and we'd love to have you back. And it kind of just opened up that conversation of like, well, listen, I have my own firm now. I don't really want to go work for another firm. If you guys need somebody to get some work done, I'm happy to work for you, but I can't necessarily do it as an employee because I want to do my own thing. I want to give this a shot. And we kind of just came up with the idea of like, hey, what if we do like a subcontractor arrangement? A lot of these firms are doing it with people in the Philippines and India and all that. They're already doing it, but maybe not so much in the US. And it was definitely a process trying to get to the point where my insurance company was comfortable with our agreement and work with their legal department and trying to put together an agreement. It took like 3 months to get an actual agreement together. But it was just that thing of just a random conversation just kind of opened the door to, you know, hey, maybe we can make this work. And I've been, you know, doing some work with them since, I think that was 2022 that I really started the subcontracting a little bit. So it's been 2 years plus of doing some work with them just to kind of get some income that's more steady than having to find my own clients.
I would love that. And I think, you know, the things that I took away was one, maybe don't be afraid to ask past employers where you left with on good terms. If you're somebody who is building a practice or are looking to build a practice, go back and ask. Like there, you never know. There's such demand for skilled workers right now to help with the load that it's very likely that you will get. The other thing is know that there are some legal ramifications around that as being a subcontractor. And it sounds like talking with your insurance company is a good starting point so you can understand like where what you need to have in place to cover yourself and be able to work for someone else. But also, you know, being flexible in the process of coming on board with someone. So do you have any other tips that you would share with anyone as far as like that part of the process goes, just so that they could kind of lay it out in their head of how they can have that conversation?
Yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to have the conversation. Just reach out. We all know these firms are having trouble bringing new people in the door, and they all promise their clients, hey, this will get done. And right now they're just working their people to the bone, right? So if you present them with an opportunity of, hey, I can take some pressure off of the people you currently have working for you by working 10 hours a week, you know, here's the rate that I want to get. And you kind of negotiate it from there. They'll tell you what they're willing to pay. And then the big thing is really talk with your insurance company, right? If you're going to start your own firm, you got to have, you know, E&O insurance. So talk with your insurance company. Mine was great. I sent them the contract that the firm sent over to me, and they kind of reviewed it and said, hey, here's what we think. These things we don't really like. I think initially they wanted me to have like $1 million of cybersecurity insurance and that kind of stuff. And it's like, listen, I'm a small business here. I don't have a need for $1 million of insurance. Yeah. And even my insurance company was like, listen, we can get that for you, but it's going to be super expensive. So it's negotiating back and forth like, hey, I'm willing to do this for you, but here's the things I need. I had to give up some things. They had to give up some things. And we just kind of made a deal work that we were both happy with. They're getting the work done they need. I'm getting a little bit of money that I need, and we're all happy.
Well, Ryan, so when you're building your business, I know actually, because you, like us, are a Tax Dome certified consultant. So you are using technology, and I would love to get your take on why using technology is important in your practice and what that has done for you as you're growing your practice. Because I also, while we're talking about this, maybe you can talk about who's on your team. Is it just you? Do you have an assistant? Do you have part-time tech, like seasonal help? Can you kind of just explain to us kind of where you've taken the practice of your business so that you can still be a present dad, a present husband, get out and do hikes and play with your family and your dog and make sure that you're enjoying life while also building a thriving business? I would love to hear more about that.
Yeah, so it's just me right now. My wife helped out a lot. She's a nurse, not an accountant, but during maternity leave with my first son, anytime he was napping, she would help me with doing engagement letters or any kind of work I needed here and there, she'd kind of help out with. I've even taught her how to use QuickBooks a little bit, so now she's helping me. You know, anytime she's got some free time, she'll help me out do some stuff, but it's mainly just me. The technology's been great. And the reason I went with TaxStone in the beginning was just that all-in-one solution, right? I didn't want to have a whole bunch of different things that I had to piece together and figure out how this technology is going to work with that technology and put it all together. I wanted something that was simple to use, and it really just helped me run my practice and keep track of everything instead of having a spreadsheet to track my clients and then figuring out, you know, okay, where am I going to store the documents and all that. What it really helped me with is designing my own processes, because starting out fresh, I didn't have a process, right? I was just get the stuff, do the work, and send it to the client. There was no real, like, how do I actually make this a process? So by being able to use the pipelines within TaxStone, I was able to figure out, okay, here's where I want to start my process. I need to get an organizer. I need to get the documents. I need to do a return. I need to review it myself, and sort of created my own process now that I can follow with every single client. It helps streamline what I'm doing and also just help me collect everything in one spot, which was really nice. And since then, it's really taught me that technology is super important in the businesses that we create. Mm-hmm. One of the things that it gave me was a phone app, right? How many accountants can say they have a phone app? When I'm talking with new clients, it's like, hey, I've got an app on your phone. You can do everything. You can pay me from there. You can message me. You can put your documents up through there. And clients are like, I can do what? Like, I don't even need to go on the computer. I can just go on my phone. Fine, I'm in.
Really nice.
Yeah, so technology is super important. I've been trying to find more ways to use technology in my business too, just to kind of streamline processes or help clients do things easier so that they don't have to spend so much time working. Yeah. And as far as what you said about, you know, how I spend time with my kids, you know, and the great thing about having your own practice is you get to set your own hours, right? So maybe the long-term goal is not to work a million hours a week, and that's fine, but I get to work whenever it's convenient for me. So if my son has to stay home from daycare because he's sick, I don't have to work during the day that day. I can work during his nap. I can work at night when he goes to bed. Being able to kind of change my schedule around what my family needs so I can spend the time with them and help them when they need it is just second to none. That's the biggest thing about owning your own firm is just being able to do what you need to do to help your family and be there for them.
And I love that. I mean, that's why I started my business too, right? Like I got tired of the 60-hour weeks working in corporate and I set out to take my skills and build my own version of freedom. One of the things I'm curious about is how you think technology has allowed you to scale and grow your business to this point over the last 4 years to where you are able to still be a solo practitioner and still make a good wage without working a million hours. I think there's a lot of people out there who have, you know, if they've been doing it for a while, they just have kind of gotten into this routine of just doing it all and working long hours and trying to keep it all in their heads and trying to, you know, they wake up in the middle of the night and they're like, oh my gosh, I forgot to send that email or I forgot to follow up with them. And, or they're drowning in like questions in all the time, right? And so they spend their waking hours trying to get the work done, but then spending their hours they should be sleeping, like responding to emails, right? So how has technology helped you avoid some of those traps and pitfalls that starting a practice, a tax practice specifically, where there's so many moving parts all the time and with just you?
Yeah, I'll say huge time savings is to just embrace video. Yeah. One of the best things I've done in the last couple of years is instead of having wrap-up meetings with every client, I do a quick video for them. The video is anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes. At the end of their tax return, when it's ready for them to look at, I do a quick video to show them, hey, here's where your tax return stands. Here's how much money you made. Here's how much taxes you owe. And the next steps are X, Y, and Z. I need information. I don't need information, whatever. And I can film those in the middle of the night when my kids are sleeping. You know, if that's what I'm working, I can film them then. I don't have to try to match up my schedule or my client's schedule. They can go and watch it 24/7. Whenever they want to watch it, they can watch it, right? So more convenient for everybody. And I've found that just by doing that video, I've answered so many of their questions that I don't get questions anymore. And yeah. If I do, it's more pointed questions like, hey, I saw you put, you know, this on this slide. Can you just tell me a little bit more about that? Perfect. Yeah, here's an answer. Instead of this hour-long meeting where we're kind of going back and forth, they're not grasping what I'm saying. And then a week later, they're like, you know, I was thinking about this. You just filed my return, but, you know, what about this? And it's like, well, I wish you told me that before we hit submit, you know? So definitely embrace video. Use it for everything you can. Even questions like, I filmed a standard video for how to pay the IRS, a standard video for how to pay Connecticut State. And anytime a client sends me an email, hey, how do I make this quarterly estimate? Send them the link to the Loom video. You don't have to record it again. It takes 3 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, that's the best thing. I mean, think about it. If you have 100 clients, you're doing an hour-long meeting with 100 clients. That's, what, 2 weeks of time?
That's you know? Fresh. And that's just sitting with the clients. Like, that's not even, like, the getting the work done, right? Like, there's all that on top of it. And I love that. We call them in Workflows for Tax Pros Loom reviews, right? Because we're using the Loom software to do that. So many of our clients have come in and been like, oh my God, this has been a game changer because they were tied to the belief that they had to get in front of their clients. They knew they didn't like it. COVID kind of helped shift that for some people, but they felt like instead of doing in person, they just had to do it via Zoom. And the time that it takes to schedule an appointment, to get on your calendar, to get on their calendar, make sure that they're all aligned. Somebody forgets that they have it, they have to reschedule and your whole calendar is booked. So that means they have to go out weeks or weeks, or you squeeze them into your Saturday morning because you feel bad, right? And all of that goes away. You literally are opening up 40 hours, possibly, depending on how people are scheduling their days. But most people, it's at least 20 hours of time on your calendar. And you're getting that back because like Ryan said, it takes 10 minutes to record a very thoughtful, very streamlined review of the return that your client understands exactly what you have going on with them. You do this for the really big guys. You do this for your little simple guys. Everybody gets treated the same. And that standardization makes you uber efficient. it saves you. I mean, if you think about it, Ryan, right? Like you complete the return the week before or a couple days before, they're scheduled to come in at 11 a.m. You still have to look at the return and remind yourself what the heck was the situation with this. So there's another like 15 minutes of like getting your stuff together for the conversation. And it's the hour of time that you spend with people, and maybe 5 or 10 minutes of it is the actual review of the return that you just did with them. The rest of it's kind of answering their questions and how can I do it different this next year, which are not conversations you should be having in the midst of your tax return preparing, like review, right? Like you should be having those conversations in December and November when you can actually do something for them. And you should be getting paid for those hours. Like don't give away your benefits to your clients for free. Like at that time, they're not going to take any action anyway. So, you know, look at this as you're preparing a return. You want them to understand what the return contains. That's all that review session should be. And if I'm wrong here, Ryan, like, you know, pipe up, because I'm talking about from the taxpayer side, because I am not a professional tax preparer. In my experience, when I'm getting a review of my return, I just want to know why I'm paying, how much I'm paying, and how it all laid out, right? I don't need to know all the things I should change next year in like right now, unless it's something that I need to be taking action on right now. I just want to get my taxes done.
For sure. And one of the, I guess, hidden benefits too of doing these review videos, right? There's a couple of things. First, you can stack them all together. So you can plan out, hey, I'm going to spend 2 hours on a Friday morning and I'm just going to do all the videos I got to do for these clients. Just knock them all out in 2 hours, right? As opposed to you want to plan, just like you said, you plan for a meeting, you got to spend 15 minutes going over the return to make sure you know what you're talking about. Then you've got to do the meeting and then you've got to kind of relax after the meeting because your brain's so, you know, crazy with whatever you just talked about. You need a break before the next meeting. You could just pump out, you know, 5-6 videos easy within an hour. And the other added benefit is that you're reviewing the return another time. So I go through, what I do is I show the return on the screen and I just kind of go through it with them. And there's been several times where I'll go through it and I've already looked this return probably 3 times. So I'll be like, wait a second. Now that I'm trying to explain this to them, that doesn't make sense. Let me go back and look at this and make sure that this is actually, you know, what we're saying here. So it helps you kind of go back through the return and really understand everything going on with the client. Make sure that the return looks good, because now instead of you just throwing, you know, numbers in boxes and scanning through it, you're actually trying to explain why they're there. And that helps you kind of just look at it again and make sure that's actually the way it needs to be.
Yeah. And you could also fix it on the fly and not feel, when you're trying to fix things like that while the client's in front of you, that doesn't feel good for you, right? And then it makes you like think, oh, the client's now not going to see me as professional. You can do all this, hit stop or cancel on the record, go and fix it, and then re-record it, right? And then send it off confidently, and your client never has to know that you missed that one line or made that one little, you know, mistake, and you can fix it. So we are huge proponents of the Leo reviews and the video reviews of the returns, because it just opens up and creates so much white space for people to do the work, to then be able to take their weekends off, go home for dinner with their families, have the flexibility, to your point, of being able to, you know, navigate kids being home and or days off, or heck, even taking vacations, right? I think people, I feel for the people that are doing it the same way they've always done it, which means that their calendars from basically February 15th through April 15th are booked 9 to 5 every day. Like that just to me is like, if you get sick in the midst of that, it can blow up your whole tax season. And so they just work and work and work even when they're sick or need a break. And that's just a hard life to do year after year after year. So
I think, Ryan,
what I want to just wrap up with today is I would love if you've given some great like value bombs here today, but I would love if you have any other tips for the person who is maybe in corporate right now or working for another firm, who's built the side gig where they're helping a few people and they see the potential, but they're just not sure how to leap off that ledge. What would you say to them today that would help them take that leap?
I mean, I'd say, first of all, just do it. So even I thought about it too much. I think I moved pretty quickly, but even I just, you know, analysis paralysis. You think about it so much and can I do this? Can I do that? Is it going to work? Can I find the clients? Yes, you can find the clients. They are out there. Maybe you have to make some concessions in the beginning, right? Everyone says go in niche and that's great. But maybe in the beginning, you've got to make concessions to just take on whatever you can get to make the numbers work. But, you know, find a way to do what you want to do, whether that's finding a firm to subcontract for, whether that's going to work for TurboTax, maybe if that's how it works, right? Just to get on your own and start doing things in your own, making your own schedule. Maybe you go work for them. You know, find a way to just go do what you want to do instead of being stuck in a career that maybe, you know, you don't want to be in that company forever. You want to do your own thing. find a way to make it work. Just find a way.
I love that. Remember, you have the skills that are valuable and people will pay for them. And if you can provide a great client experience and use those skills and be willing to figure it out, you will succeed. There's no doubt about it. Well, Ryan, I really appreciate it. I would love you to share how people can connect with you, follow along on your journey as you continue to build your business. We didn't get a chance to talk about what's next for Ryan. So I don't know if you want to give like a 30-second, like, here's what my vision is for my business. And then people can come and join and follow along on your journey.
Yeah, for sure. So people can find me on Twitter. I'm pretty active on there at @RElblind. You know, I'm also active on LinkedIn too, Ryan Elblind on LinkedIn. But basically, you know, what I'm looking to do is just grow my business for trade businesses. I'm trying to bring on more trade clients. I love the ones that I have right now. I'm trying to really help them in full service, you know, whether it's accounting, taxes, kind of that outsourced controller, CFO type work. I love doing that stuff for them. They're great working with their hands, but they maybe not the best at working with the books, right? So they need our help. And that's really what I'm trying to do. So feel free to follow along.
Awesome. Well, Ryan, thank you so much for your time today. We're really excited about what your next chapter entails. And yeah, thanks for sharing all the goods. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you for tuning in to Diary of a Tax Practice Owner. We hope today's episode inspired you to take the next step in your entrepreneurial journey. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, leave us a 5-star rating. Your feedback helps us reach more listeners just like you. Don't forget to follow us on social media or on our website at workflowsfortaxpros.com for more resources and insights. Until next time, remember, automation equals freedom, and building a business that you love is within your reach. See you soon.